Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast, the only podcast that's brought to you by this guy right here, everyone's favorite Rhode Islander, John Orlando. I kind of mixed it up on y'all. You thought you were going to get the usual spiel out of me, right? Nah. Not for episode 74. I'm going to mix it up a little bit. But nonetheless, I hope all of you are doing very, very well out there. It's a very warm and humid and sticky day here in Columbus, Ohio, as I'm recording this intro for episode 74, featuring my guest, Stephen Hines. Now, you may ask yourself, who is Stephen Hines? Well, he is an author, he's an illustrator, he's a self-publisher. He's a gentleman that, like many other guests that have been on this podcast, have a passion for writing and a passion for comic books. So he's a guy that's really, really interesting. He's out in the Dayton area, and we sat down and talked this week and talked about a couple of his projects, one of which being Valedictorian USA. It's a interesting comic book about reality television. And I read the first issue, and I gotta say, it's different. It's unique. I like it a lot. But he also has a couple of other things out there. Cracker Stacker, Zombie Fabulous, Hocus Focus, Iconoplastic, just some of the titles that Stephen works so diligently on to push out, to entertain the folks, and to get his thoughts, his ideas, his creative energies out there in the world. So we're going to be talking to Stephen here in a little bit, but before we do that, you know, I want to talk real quickly about an improvement to this podcast. Now, you can listen to this podcast on SoundCloud. Yes, that's right. New episodes will be uploaded to that great forum of SoundCloud. I'm not sure if I'm going to put up all the episodes. If you look, this episode is up. The last one I did with Hot Commodity Matt Mason is up on SoundCloud. I'm not sure that I'm going to go back and put the back catalog on there. Yeah, it just depends on how time-consuming and how hard it is. But I'm glad that I'm out there on SoundCloud with many other podcasts and many other musicians and other artists that are on SoundCloud. And hey, you know, like I said, it's another avenue to get the word out there. So, you know, I'm still going to be on Stitcher. I'm still having my stuff automatically uploaded to Stitcher. And maybe, just maybe, one day I'll get it on iTunes. Again, I will not rant too much about iTunes, but we've had another go-round. I think this is the third or fourth round that I've had with them about getting the PVD Cast on iTunes, but there seems to be always some problem, and, well, let's just say the customer service and I are not communicating well, I guess, or something. I'm not sure. But there you have it. That was a great big announcement that I wanted to get out there for those that did not follow me on Twitter, which, by the way, shame on you. You should be following me on Twitter. At PVDMVP. But anyways, I dropped that last week. Very happy to be on SoundCloud. And there you go. I've rambled enough about that particular topic. But I know there's some folks out there that want to hear my two cents worth on a big topic that has rocked the professional wrestling world. Let's talk about Hulk Hogan's racist rant. It broke, I believe, last Thursday that apparently Hulk Hogan has made some very inappropriate comments using the N-word quite frequently in a rant that was supposed to be private. It was about the fact that Brooke Hogan, his daughter, was dating an African-American fellow or had some type of relationship with an African-American fellow, and he went on this rant and used the N-word like three or four times, and that has caused a lot of fallout for the Hulkster. And you know what? Automatically, the WWE fired him from Tough Enough. The WWE has removed him from the alumni section of the website. The WWE has canceled the Legends contract, all of which I feel are appropriate consequences. Now, I must confess that I'm a little bit ignorant of the facts of whether or not the WWE are going to eliminate all traces of Hulk Hogan. I have read one story that stated that they're thinking about that. Then I have seen six or seven that have never even mentioned it. I read another article that said they're not going to do that. Look, I hope they don't take him. And quite frankly, I don't know how they can. I mean, he is professional wrestling. I mean, how are you going to not have WrestleMania on the WWE Network? Especially his main event match. Like, I just don't see where it's going to be possible. I think that's ridiculous. And I'll even say that I, though absolutely appalled by what Chris Benoit did and personally feel that hopefully he's in the deepest, darkest corner of hell for what he did. I was not an advocate for eliminating him from the tape history. I just think that that's silly. I mean, you know, you don't see the NBA erasing Boston Celtic games that had Len Bias in it, a guy who created a lot of controversy for the NBA. You don't see the NFL films cutting out different people that caused a lot of problems. You know, and I mean, hell, there's a long list of them. But, you know, the players that caused problems for the league, they're not cut out of games. So, you know, I don't know. I think it's rewriting history, and I'm not a big fan of that. I really am not. I just think that it happened. It is what it is. You know, you don't glorify it, but, you know, you don't necessarily censor it either. And, you know, ultimately, it sucks that Hulk Hogan made some poor choices, and personally, I feel like, you know, in the moment, he used some language that was vehemently inappropriate. Language that was racist. Do I think that he is a racist? I don't think so. I don't think he hates African-American people. I think by now, if he did, we would have heard about it. Because let's be honest, the last 10 years in the pro wrestling industry, it's the era of the shoot interview. You know, where I'm sure someone of African-American background that had interaction with Hogan, if he was racist towards him, we would have already known about that. You know, but I don't know. And then some people might say, well, then why would you use that language, John? I don't know. It's kind of a gray area. I guess if you're using that type of language, does that make you racist or not? I don't know. But nonetheless, it's just another childhood hero that seems to be falling here. First Bill Cosby and now Hulk Hogan, man. I don't know. But anyways, there you go. That's my 2 cents worth when it comes to the Hulk Hogan issue. I think he made incredibly poor choices. Hopefully, the WWE does not eliminate him from their history books. I'm totally cool with the consequences that he received. And there you go. So, all right. Well, with that, let's go on in, if I could speak today, let's go on in to my conversation with Stephen Hines. So I'm going to throw it here to a very quick musical interlude after I talk to you a little bit about a particular product that I know you need to know about, ladies and gentlemen. And of course, I'm talking about Bluehost.com. Bluehost is the official web hosting service for PVDcast.com, which is where you hear this great podcast. So I gotta give mad props to the customer service department and for the entire company of Bluehost. They've done a fabulous job in the time that I've had them as my hosting service for PVDcast.com. You know, I talked a little bit about another company that doesn't have great customer service. Well, no, that doesn't exist at Bluehost.com. No. Those folks over there are top-notch. There's been a few times I've had some problems, quick phone call or live chat, and what do you know, the problem is fixed. They have amazing deals on domain names and hosting services. So the best thing you can do if you need a website for whatever purpose, man, whether you want to have your just personal blog or you want to have something for school or you need something for work, just go over to Bluehost.com and check out all the details. And I guarantee you that you will not regret having Bluehost handle all of your web hosting needs. So with that, let's get on into that conversation with Stephen Hines right on the other side of this small musical break.
How you doing, man?
Not too bad, man. It's a little rainy out here in Columbus. How is it in Dayton?
It was rainy earlier. It's just hot and muggier than Satan's armpit right now. We're here.
I gotcha. Well, as I talked about in my intro, you're an independent author, an independent comic book creator. And so let's just maybe start at ground zero, if you will. How'd you get started or how'd you get interested in being an author, being a comic book creator?
Oh, God. I've been into comic books ever since I was a little kid, going with my mom and grocery shopping and, you know, the spinning rack of Marvel comics and stuff like that, and begging for a Spider-Man comic and stuff. And I tried desperately to draw my own comics when I was in grade school and probably even junior high, and And I just eventually gave up because I realized that I was slower than a sloth on Quaaludes at drawing. And eventually I got into writing through reading a lot of science fiction novels and because of Star Wars, honestly, because I got away from reading, being an avid reader for a while. And then when the Star Wars movies came out, and I was a complete junkie for the Star Wars movies. And then I saw that there were books and comics about Star Wars, and I was like, I'm in. I can get back in that world, and that's what sucked me back in. And then I started writing, and then I got away from writing again. And then when I was in college, I decided that I had the writing bug again, and I actually minored in creative writing while majoring in education.
Oh, okay. All right. You know, you mentioned the spinner rack. I can't tell you how many guys have been on this podcast, and we talk about it all the time about just. For me, it was a drugstore down on the street corner. Man, you go down there and they had the spinner rack, and then they had a few on the shelf, and that just and those were the days, man. Those were I think made comics more accessible than comic book stores.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, granted, you're only getting the most mainstream stuff, but still, just talking about that spinner rack with you, I'm feeling all these waves of nostalgia right now. You know?
Yeah, yeah. So what was the first thing that you wrote? Do you remember what that was? Was it something, you know, something, a story that you wrote for class, or what was the, do you remember?
Oh man.
Did I catch you off guard with that question? You weren't expecting that question, were you?
No, no, that's a good thing, because not that I'm Stan Lee or anything, but I do ask a lot of the same questions. I don't remember what the assignment was, but it was, I just remember the only thing that stands out is an assignment in high school, and it was an American lit class, and my teacher, who was very, very sparing with her praise, wrote on my paper that my writing style reminded her of Mark Twain, and she really loved it. And you can't get a much better comparison than that. I mean, I just lit up like a Christmas tree when I saw those comments on there. And that really, you know, gave me the confidence to kind of, you know, give it a shot.
Dude, that's like, you can't put the bar any higher.
Yeah.
Seriously.
It was slightly good.
Yeah. Wow. Well, maybe, so when did you start actually coming up with some of the different books that you've come up with? And let me just name a few of them. You know, Cracker Stacker is one of your comic books as well. It's Valedictorian USA, which we'll talk quite a bit about, but that is now in a trade paperback. Zombie Fabulous is another comic book that you have, which issues 2 coming out real soon. Hocus Focus, though, is more of a novel, as well as the you have a short story in The End of the World as We Know It. So what was the first thing out of these that you created?
Hocus Focus was the first.
Okay. Give us a little synopsis of what Hocus Focus is about?
Sure. It's about an eighth grade kid named Lenny Lucent, who is a skateboarder and a punk rocker. And at the beginning of the school, he was going to school in Columbus, Ohio. And he was getting in with the wrong crowd and getting into trouble and was about ready to get expelled. So his mom, a single mom, packs him up and moves him out into a little known suburb of Columbus called Armpit, Ohio. And I guess that sounds like armpit on purpose. That's where my sense of humor stopped developing in eighth grade. When they get to their new town, he needs contacts. And she randomly picks an eye doctor out of the phone book, and they go, and he gets this really freaky eye doctor who gives him these contacts and makes him, you know, swears him to secrecy and tells him that these contacts will help him to see special things. And he's just like, whatever, this guy's a creeper. And he starts wearing them, and he starts seeing what people are really like on the inside. He doesn't really understand that that's the case for a while, but like his gym teacher is a caveman. His name is Mr. Neanderthal, and his math teacher is a mummy, and she's wearing the bandages with scarabs crawling around in and out of her bandages. And most of the kids at his school are walking, talking Ken and Barbie dolls, and except for the punk rock kids. And he meets this girl named Pauline, who everybody thinks has a form of autism. and he can tell with his context that that's not the case, and so he makes it his mission to try to help her before the magic of his context wears off. And in between getting ready to play in the school's talent show at the end of the school year in his punk band.
All right. So it's more of a coming of age tale. It would be appropriate for, you know, middle school kids, you would say?
Absolutely,
because they can clearly relate to it. I was going to mention Elm Pit, Ohio. It's your own Shermer, Illinois, if you will. You just kind of created it on your own?
Well, it's mostly based on a town where we used to teach when I taught junior high.
Okay, all right.
Which
okay.
I remain nameless.
So you drew a strong influence from that particular small town.
Yeah, and the principal of the junior high is very strongly based on a not-so-lovely school administrator I had to deal with when I taught 8th grade.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Well, let's segue over to sticking with that theme of education, because Valedictorian USA, you've had several different, you call them propaganda videos on your website, to talking about the fact that you have it now in a collection or in a soft cover or trade paperback, whatever you'd like to call it. But let's talk a little bit about what is Valedictorian USA.
It is a satire of reality television with 9 high school kids who 8 of the 9 are walking, talking stereotypes. I'd love to explore the stereotypes if you haven't picked up on that yet. And they're all competing to become the valedictorian of the entire country, the United States, with big, huge cash prizes and a book deal on the line. And I also have a lot of fun with the teachers who are the judges on the TV show as well. And I think it's hilarious, and I had a ton of fun writing, and it's kind of my pride and joy.
Well, let's talk about one of the characters, because I met you at Space, and I picked up issue 1, and as I read through it, one character really stood out. And so I wanted to get your comments. Robert Jackson.
I knew that's what you were going to.
So he is, shall we say, a neo-Nazi African-American fellow? Would that be the best way to describe it? So what?
That's a nice way to describe it.
What was your? Why did you decide to go that route? I guess WTF, so to speak, as the kids would say. What? You know.
Honestly, he's based. My wife used to work in education, and she's a librarian now.
Okay.
And she was working with the most troubled kids of the most troubled kids when she was in education. I don't know how she did it. And when she first started, she kept coming home from work every day with a splitting headache, saying, "Honey, I have this African-American kid who's drawing swastikas and writing Nazi slogans all over his notebooks, and I can't get it through his head that makes no sense. What do we do?" And I was like, "You're on your own, but I'm freaking using that because, you know, when life gives you material like that, I'm taking it."
Oh, wow. Wow. I mean, that just boggles my mind. All right. Well, hey.
I always have to explain that character because I was at Fandom Fest in Louisville, Kentucky a few summers ago. If you don't know what that is, it's a half sci-fi and half horror convention. Okay. And they have a lot of authors there. And I had issue 2 of Valedictorian out on my table, and it has Robert's Nazi armband in full view on the cover. And they're one part of the convention. There are some B movies and like showings of the B movies. And one of the actors from one of the B movies was a rather buff African American guy. And he came over to my table and pointed to that cover and leaned on my table and looked me in the eye and said, "Do you want to explain this to me?"
Whoa.
And I was like, "Oh my God, I'm going to die." And then after I explained it to him, his face just lit up, and he just started cracking and laughing. He said, "You know, you have guts, man. I like you." And then he started to tell me about how he wrote and directed a musical about it was a cross between Hitler and Martin Luther King Jr. that he was doing. And I was just like, "What are the odds that I'm going to run into that guy?"
Wow, that's a story right there. All right, well, let's talk a little bit more about this particular project of Valedictorian USA. Did you have to do a lot of watching of reality TV?
Yeah, and I hate reality TV with a passion.
Okay.
Actually,
not even just one guilty pleasure. You're like,
For a while, I was pretty addicted to Gene Simmons's so-called reality show. And the longer you watch any of them, the more you start figuring out, you know, how manipulated and fake it is. And but I forced myself, and it was brutal. I'm not gonna lie. I forced myself to watch 2 marathons of America's Next Top Model for research.
Oh my! I will attest that I have watched an episode or two of that, and not on my own volition. And it is awful.
It was just horrible looking at these beautiful women for two straight seasons of it. But I was actually taking notes about the flow of the narrative that they construct on these shows, and how, you know, what they do before a commercial break, and how they'll end with a tense dramatic moment, and the music that's involved, and how when they come back from a commercial, what they do, and how they tend to end each episode, and kind of get an idea of the story arc so I can emulate that. And it was painful, even though there were beautiful women on the screen, because I knew how fake it was, but that's one of the few times I've actually done research before I've written anything.
Well, you know, one of the things, I think you even mentioned it too in one of your propaganda videos, the thing that I thought that was most striking about your book was the fact that you just mentioned how overproduced and how slickly edited and how just over-manufactured reality TV is, but yet the artwork is very kind of punk rockish, kind of, I don't know the adjective to use, you know, but it's clearly the opposite of that. Grunge, maybe? I don't know. Like, it's not as overly slickly produced. Was that a conscious decision?
When I was looking for Valedictorian USA, actually started out as the novel in script format.
Okay.
And I had a literary agent for a while, and she thought it would make a better graphic novel. And then, to make a long story short, we ended up parting ways. But I put an ad on Digital Webbing, and I had a bunch of people who read my synopsis of my story and got back with me and wanted to draw some sample pages.
Mm-hmm.
And Daniel Salcido, who's the artist for the first 4 issues, as soon as I saw his art, it just screamed punk rock to me. And as an elderly punk rocker, I was like, oh my God, this is the dude I want to work with. And he was so into the story that he was willing to work for about a third of the going rate of a freelance artist, because he was that into it. And his art got slicker and slicker as it went along, and then he eventually had to bail on the project because he is a graphic designer now.
Okay.
He was offered a position at a firm that had never had that position before, and he had to build it up from the ground. And so he's like, man, I hate to do this, but I just don't have time to do this in comics anymore. And so I found a new artist from the UK named Gemma Moody, and she's slicker and more polished than Daniel was. But the style, I thought it was a pretty smooth transition between artists.
Okay. All right, let's talk about another thing that I mentioned that's coming out that I got to say the art on it is, going from a punk rock standpoint, I'm going to go to the other end, the one that is super polished, that is Zombie Fabulous. So you want to give a quick synopsis of what Zombie Fabulous is, because it's got a unique twist to it in terms of, you know, the zombie mythos, if you will.
Zombie Fabulous is about drag queens who die and come back as zombies, and their whole inner conflict is they desperately want to continue looking fabulous, as all drag queens do. Yet they are decaying and craving brains, and obviously that causes quite a few problems.
Well, the artwork on that one, done by Aaron, is it Linneman?
Yes.
Yes. Man, it's really beautiful. It's very, very stylistic, and I think it adds a lot to that tale. So how did you like working with Aaron? Did you guys get get along real well and both get your ideas across, you know, and whatnot in the creation of those two books.
He's easily one of the easiest people I've ever worked with. I mean, just super professional. He's fast, and best of all, he's willing to do the artwork on faith and wait until the Kickstarter's over with and trust that the money's going to come through, that I'll be able to pay him after mm-hmm. the whole issue is done,
mm-hmm.
which is saying something. And his art in issue one is a little more abstract and kind of reminds me of Sam Keith, you know, for mm-hmm. the Max and things like that.
Yeah.
And issue two, he just got the art for issue two just came to my inbox a few days ago, and it's all done, and it's not abstract anymore. He was contracted to do an entire graphic novel as soon as issue one came out, and so I had to wait for him to have time to fit me in for issue two. And now that he has that whole graphic novel under his belt, it's like he's gotten all old school, and it's like really retro style, but he's gotten like 300% better, and he was already awesome with issue one, and mm-hmm. it's just making me like a kid in a candy store. I can't wait for people to see it.
Now, how many issues is Zombie Fabulous set to go? Is it supposed to go more than two, I presume?
It's going to be a trilogy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So, and do you still have the Kickstarter going for that?
It is.
Or is it? Has it ended?
It hasn't launched yet. Yeah.
Oh, it hasn't launched yet. Okay. All right.
We're going to be filming the video for it on Monday, which will involve Aaron and I being dolled up in drag for the video. And I have a former student who went to college in Pittsburgh to be a special effects makeup artist, and she's going to be dolling us up and turning us into drag queens for the video. And another former student who is going to college to be a videographer, and he's going to film it and edit it, and we're going to have some time-lapse photography where you'll get to see us gradually being turned into hideous drag queens.
And that will be available at stephenhines.org, by the way.
Yeah.
We'll go ahead and plug it. I mean, all right, well, let's talk about another interesting comic, Cracker Stacker. Now, it is billed as, and I hope I get this correct, Tales from Retail? Did I get that correct? Or
yes.
All right. So you want to tell a little bit about what Cracker Stacker is all about?
Cracker Stacker follows my misadventures working in a grocery store. I worked at a grocery store from the age of 16 until the age of 28 when I finally got my first teaching job and mm-hmm. moved far, far away from my hometown. Thank God. And so I'm still in the part of my misadventures when I was 16 for the most part. But so you get to see me with my awesome flowing stylish mullet that I had from the age of 16 until probably about the age of 19 or 20.
And let me guess, I'm sure that the stores are chock full of the wonderful, wonderful people that you would meet at the grocery store.
Yeah. I've kind of fallen into a trend of telling a linear memoir type story, if I can talk, and interrupting every once in a while with something that's even funnier than me being a complete screw up as a 16-year-old. And the issue that I'm inking right now is called Adventures in Customer Service, and it's chock full of really short stories of bizarre and idiotic customers that I had to deal with. And I think it's going to be the funniest one yet. I think people are going to really like it.
Now, are you the writer, the artist, and the inker on Cracker Stacker?
Yes. That's the only one I do my own art on. I very, very much prefer to pay someone else to do it.
I got to say, it's the most unique name, too, because when I saw the name, I'm like, Cracker Stacker, what the heck? And then I'm like, okay, I got it. So, unique name on that one, man.
Yeah, the name actually came from, I was an assistant manager for 7 of the 12 years I worked there.
Okay.
And I had to go to another store in our chain and beg for some items that were in our advertisement that week because we had sold out. And the manager there looked at me and He's like, I heard you went back to college to be a teacher. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, good. You don't want to be a cracker stacker your whole life.
So that's an industry term?
I that's the only time I've ever heard it, but it stuck in my mind so much that I had to use it.
Wow. Okay. Well, hey. So, but again, you know, you're not just all about comic books. You know, we talked about Hocus Pocus, but you also have a short story in a compilation called The End of the World as We Know It.
Yep.
Can you give us a quick little synopsis of what that novel, or is it a novella or is it a novel?
It's just a short story.
Short story? Okay, short story. Can you give us a quick synopsis on what that particular story is about?
It is a dystopian science fiction satire story that is about, it's meant to be a cautionary tale, as all good satire should be, mm-hmm. and it is about what would happen if America became a theocracy in which our entire government was based around a religion. And the two main characters are brother and sister who travel around with a holographic abstinence-only educational program to teach kids that, you know, birth control is bad and abstaining is the only way.
You know what? This is the, since you mentioned it, this is, it seems to be that dystopian society is the hot thing nowadays. Do you agree?
Yeah, and I teach a dystopian science fiction novel called Feed by M.T. Anderson, which if you haven't read it, I highly recommend it. To me, it's a masterpiece, which is why I've been teaching it for a decade. But that came out way before it became the hot trend. And then once Hunger Games came out, now all the publishers are just, you know, if it's dystopian, they're slapping it out there and just packing the aisles of the bookstore with it. And, you know, they'll beat that horse into a fine red mist and then move on to the next trend, I'm sure.
Well, I was just visiting my cousin over the weekend, and on his cable guide in the previews, they actually have a category called dystopian dramas. I'm like, oh, wow, okay. And it's chock full of shows that are dystopian, you know, like Helix and Under the Dome and all those type of shows. And I'm like, this is where we've gotten to, folks. We actually have a category for such a thing. You know? Yeah.
And sadly, about 99% of the people who are watching TV could not define the term.
No, right, exactly. You are absolutely correct. They would be completely clueless about it. So there's another one final project that I wanted to get your thoughts on and talking about. SMK?
Yes, sir.
Which is a horror genre, correct?
Yes.
Now, is it a comic or is it a actual prose that you are writing?
It is a horror comic, and it's going to be a graphic novel. We're just going to put it all out at once. And I have an artist. That's a new term. Artist. He's the artist of the artist. The artist is a guy named Damian Brunk from Dayton, who I stumbled across on Facebook because he was a friend of a friend, and I saw some of his artwork, and I started kind of creeping on his Facebook profile, checking out his different art he had posted. And it was very much in the style of Black Flag album covers. And I'm a massive Black Flag fan. Obviously I love punk rock, but I started pestering him, and it took me about a year to wear him down. And I kept saying, dude, we need to do a comic book. Dude, we need to do a comic book together, dude. And finally he was like, okay, send me the freaking script. And I sent it to him, and he was, I'm in. This is awesome. I love it. I'm in.
So is there any little tidbits you can give of it, since you're still you know, putting all of the pieces together? Is there any little tidbits about what we could expect in that particular graphic novel?
It is about a serial killer who specializes in killing soccer moms who drive minivans. So the SMK stands for Soccer Mom Killer.
All right. All you people in all the suburbs in Ohio, watch out.
Yeah, and we are back. This is the first time my fiction has re-entered the town of Olmpit, Ohio.
Oh, really? Okay.
With a much darker story that is in no way should end up in the hands of a junior high kid.
So, what are some of your influences when you sit down to write? Whether they are comic book authors or if they're just ordinary authors or whatever, who are some of the influences that you personally have?
Oh gosh, I would say definitely Alan Moore as far as comic books go would be my idol. Neil Gaiman.
Mm-hmm.
Garth Ennis, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Bendis, of course. I know I'm going to forget some people. I love Sam Keith not just because of his art, but because of the really deep psychological stuff that he has in his writing. Non-comic book writers, Chuck Palahniuk is one of my all-time favorites. Guy who wrote Fight Club.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as hoity-toity dead white guy authors, James Joyce is my favorite of all time.
Well, no, I think they call them classic writers.
Yeah, you can call them that.
Yeah. Now, I know in one of your particular propaganda videos for Valedictorian USA, you mentioned huge fan of Watchmen.
Yes.
So when did you first read Watchmen? Because I, too, also, huge fan of Watchmen. It's my favorite, hands down. And every 3, 4, 5 years, I sit down and reread it and just love it. And I even think that Zack Snyder did a phenomenal job on the movie. I think the movie is really good. But when did you, first realize, wow, this is amazing? When's the first time that you read it, I guess, is what I'm getting at. I don't know why. I don't want to make it that fancy. Hoity-toity here.
Yeah, hoity-toity. I think it was about 10 or 12 years ago.
Okay.
And I just remember reading the whole thing, and when I finished, I had to grab a piece of paper and try to write down everything I could think of as far as the themes and the symbolism and the way that he had the images in the comic book saying one thing while the words were creating this tension by going in the other way with irony. And I just was so blown away. I had to write down all these notes as if I were going to be writing a college paper on it, which I would have gladly done.
I credit Watchmen for getting me back into comics because much like yourself, I was a kid that went to the rack down at the drugstore, but I was heavily, you were much more with Star Wars, but G.I. Joe was my poison, that I was, that toy tie-in. And, you know, as you got older, that it wasn't as cool to have the toy tie-ins, and sometimes they just ran out. And for a while I was out there, and I remember reading it in high school, I was like, whoa, this is just amazing. So I guess I'm going to ask the loaded question, have you read any of the before Watchmen's?
I read a couple.
Okay.
And before I forget, I totally agree with you on the movie. And anybody who disagrees with us that it was a fantastic adaptation is wrong. I'm just going to say that.
Right. No, you're right. No.
They're wrong. But that's all. End of discussion. But I read a couple of the before Watchmen, and what I took away from it was they were doing a good job of fleshing out kind of the backstory of the characters. So the plot-wise, it was fine. Art-wise, it was fine. But there was zero as far as the genius that Alan Moore has of the layers of theme and symbolism. It was just plot and surface with none of the amazingness that Alan Moore had underneath the surface.
I'm going to disagree a little bit with that, as I thought that a couple of them were just god-awful. That it was just, I was like, we're just cashing in, aren't we, DC? We need more money. I thought there were a couple that were good, and I agree with you. It's very much all about the background of the characters and not the events of the comic itself. Some of them were good, but there were some god-awful ones.
I only read a couple issues, but which ones did you read that were god-awful?
The Silk Spectre one is terrible. It literally, and it pains me because I like Amanda Connor. I think Amanda Connor is a good writer. I think Amanda Connor brings a very fun style of art to her projects. But I swear to God that it was kind of like, I think that in the middle of her penciling and writing this particular comic, DC called and goes, oh, hey, wait a minute, you got to do this. Okay? Because it just doesn't even work. It just, that one was pretty bad. I didn't like the Minutemen. They did one of those. I thought it went totally against everything that they had done in the actual Watchmen book. I was like, there's no reason for any of this to happen. So yeah, those two were god-awful. They were pretty much trash. I admit, I'm such a fan. I bought them. They're sitting over here on the shelf. I muddled through them, but some of them were a task to read.
Yeah, I believe it. I believe it. But, you know, you can't fault DC for trying to keep their ship afloat because, obviously, you know, their profit margins just have to be as horrible as in any comic book author's.
Probably. Probably.
They're practically a non-profit.
So let's talk for a little bit. Do you read some of the stuff that the big two push out or even other, quote, major companies like IDW or Dark Horse or anything like that? Do you still frequent the rack, so to speak?
I still pick up some stuff from DC's Vertigo line because okay. In case you haven't figured it out, I like dark and edgy stuff. That's what hits me the hardest. I do like funny stuff, but dark and edgy stuff is my go-to. That's not really a genre per se, but
no.
But I have noticed that Vertigo's kind of gone down the tube since they brought a new person in to run it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as strong as it used to be. I've gotten to be a big fan of some stuff that Image is putting out lately, like Sex Criminals, and I love Chew. Chew is amazing.
Yeah,
it just has me in stitches on every page, and all the little things that the illustrator hides in the background that are just hilarious. And then the artist for Sex Criminals does that too. And I have read some stuff from IDW. I like some stuff from Dark Horse. You can't go wrong with Fantagraphics or Top Shelf.
Oh no. So are there particular, are you like me, do you follow particular writers in those particular bigger companies?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
I haven't followed Garth Ennis into, I think we talked about this at Space, about him writing Punisher.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to read those. It was because he wrote them, and I'm a huge, huge fan of him as an author. And
yeah, his run on Punisher was good, and I will say that probably for that dark, edgy, but also funny, The Boys from Dynamite.
I
love The Boys. I don't know if you did you pick those up?
I was just like you read my mind. I was just getting other than after Watchmen ruined superheroes for me because no one could touch that. It's the pinnacle, and The Boys has been the only superhero comic I've been able to enjoy since Watchmen because
mm-hmm.
it's so just so messed up and so hilarious.
It is. It's weird. It's messed up. It's just. It's also too. I always thought that it answered the question that even as a comic book fan, you always wondered like, what happens when Superman destroys half of Metropolis? Like, who the hell pays for that? You know, what happens? So, and that was good. I'm a big Ennis fan too. Big fan of his. Always have been. Even his World War II stuff is really good. And I don't know if I'm really a World War II type of guy, but his stuff was really good with that.
I need to give that a shot, too. I have not read it.
Well, with that being said, is there anything else that you would like to plug in terms of, we've talked all about your books and whatnot. We've even mentioned your website, stephenhines.org. Anything else you want to mention here? We're getting up to about 45 minutes or so that we've been chatting. So, anyways, any social media things you want to throw out there, websites, any other things?
Yeah, if anyone's interested in the Zombie Fabulous Kickstarter, it is not live yet, but it will be soon. And if you look me up on Facebook and or my publisher page, my comic book company is called ALB Books, which stands for Albino Leopard Boy Books. And if you look up my ALB Books page, then you will not be able to get away from me hounding you and begging you to pledge on my Kickstarter campaign.
Now, Valedictorian USA, the graphic novel, is available through Amazon, correct?
Absolutely, yep.
Okay.
Paperback and Kindle.
Okay, and I think you did mention, too, on your website that if you do purchase Valedictorian USA and let people know at Amazon that you liked it, you know, because that helps you out ultimately. And so if you do pick one of those up, make sure that you jump back on there. Which those Amazon surveys are not that tough anyways. You can do them in like a minute, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, if someone writes a review for me on Amazon for the graphic novel and sends me proof, I will gladly mail them some free stuff in the mail, including some of my mini comics.
Well, there you go. See? There you go. There's even more motivation to write a review on Amazon.
Yeah, get some mini comics of a 16-year-old with a mullet and a box cutter.
Yes. Which, by the way, nowadays you could not have that on property of the, on school property. So make sure your box cutter is put away.
Yeah, keep your box cutter at home, boys and girls.
All right, well, Steven, thanks for coming on, man. It's been fun.
Hey, it's been a blast. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Well, folks, I'm gonna, as I always do, I'm gonna throw it to a real quick break and then we'll be back to wrap up this episode.
Let me talk to you real quick about an opportunity to do something good, to get a little karma on your side. You know what I'm saying? Maybe you need some, maybe you don't. You know, as far as I'm concerned, you can never have too much good mojo on your side. But let's talk about an opportunity to help keep independent radio here in the state of Ohio. That's right. CD 1025 FM here in Columbus, Ohio has got a crowdfunding drive going on right now as we speak in the hopes of purchasing their broadcast license. Now, the license right now, it costs $20,000 a month. A month! To have that license so that they can broadcast all their faithful listeners here in the Central Ohio area. But you know what? I don't need to tell you anymore. You just need to go over to cd1025.com/invest and see what awesome perks, what awesome things you can do to help keep radio independent right here in the state of Ohio. You know, give a dollar, give $2, give whatever you're comfortable with. I did, you should as well. Let's do it, people. Let's help CD1025 get their broadcasting license and stay independent. Well, there you have it. A conversation that I had with Mr. Steven Hines. I hope that you found it entertaining. I hope you found it interesting. Steven, very, very passionate about his writing. And, you know, like I said at the beginning here, and I think I even mentioned it in the conversation, Valedictorian USA, I picked up the first issue, and it was very well written. I liked it a lot. And I'm interested in that type of subject about how the media is manipulated and used to kind of push a particular viewpoint, and how many people that just passively watch TV or passively watch that show just kind of, you know, go along with the flow without asking questions. And, you know, what can I say? That's just my thing, you know. But anyways, glad to talk to another independent creator, another independent author, another independent comic book creator right here on this podcast. And, you know, real quick, I'm going to go back to a quick little message you heard from me about CD1025. It's a great radio station here, folks. I mean, I can't tell you how awesome it is. You just have to experience it. And I know many people are listening all around the state of Ohio, all around the Midwest. And probably even out on the East Coast. And some people are probably saying, who cares? Well, you know what, man? Again, the focus of this particular podcast has always been independence. Independent people doing cool independent projects. And there's none more so than CD1025. Independent. They're the epitome of it. So help keep them independent. As I mentioned, go over to that website. Go over to their Indiegogo. Give a couple bucks or whatnot if you can and help keep it independent. So, all right, with that being said, let's start wrapping things up here, ladies and gentlemen. So with that being said, let's get right into it. Let's get into Orlando's Fade. All right, it's becoming thematic. I will say here for Orlando's faves, or maybe even predictable, when I'm going to talk about something that I think is really cool, something that I think you should check out. The last several of these have been movies, and we're going to stick with movies again, because I'll tell you right now, I watched a movie over the weekend that is, 45 years old. But it really was a very good movie. I highly recommend it. So my fave for this episode of the PVD cast is the 1970 film Kelly's Heroes. Now it stars a who's who of Hollywood. Clint Eastwood, Telly Savalas, Don Rickles, Carol O'Connor, and Donald Sutherland, just to name a few. And it's a World War II flick. It's got a little bit of a comedic edge to it, but it's a pretty good flick. My only gripe, two and a half hours. I was going to say 2 hours and 30 minutes, whatever. A little long, but overall, I really enjoyed it. I'm not a huge World War II buff. But Garth Ennis put it down as one of his, I saw online, it was one of his favorite World War II genre films ever. And I was like, well, as we just got done kissing Garth's ass earlier in this podcast, you know, if Garth likes it, then I, you know, I'm going to check it out. And I really did like it. It was very good. Directed by Brian Hutton. If you get an opportunity to check out Kelly's Heroes, I certainly would. That is my fave for episode 74. Of the PVD cast. All right, hey, with that, I want to remind you, ladies and gentlemen, check out the PVD cast not only at pvdcast.com, but check it out on Stitcher Radio. Also, check it out on SoundCloud, as if I haven't mentioned that enough already, but definitely check it out there. And if you're on SoundCloud, give it a thumbs up. Tell me that you like it. Provide some feedback. Feel free to share it. You can share it with the rest of your folks there. Feel free to do that. But enough about that. Let's talk real quick where you can contact me if you have a question, you have a comment, you want to let me know what you thought about this episode. Obviously, Twitter. Go to at PVDMVP. That's also my same Instagram account username, by the way. You can shoot me an email, johnorlando@pvdcast.com. If you'd like to be a little bit more lengthier? If you would like to be a little more lengthy. Anyways, shoot me an email if you don't want to confine yourself to just 140 characters. Because sometimes I know you got a lot to say, and I don't like to send like 8 tweets to just say what I need to say in a paragraph. I'd rather email someone. But that's me. You pick whichever way you want to. Just let me know what you're thinking about the show. With that, I'm going to wrap things up, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Thanks for listening, folks.